Sounds True presents Sacred Contracts, Session 2, Sacred Contracts of the Masters, with Carolyn Mace.
As a way of introducing that perception, I thought it would be of great interest to take you into the contracts of four people that you're going to recognize, whose lives we consider to be more divinely oriented than ours. And that's why I've chosen them, because what you're going to see is that they, like all of you, were born not knowing their contract. They were not born knowing how powerful they would be if they surrendered their personal will to a higher source of wisdom. And we'll talk about that as we move on. So I use them because they illustrate the divine pursuit. These beings are Jesus, Buddha, Muhammad, and Abraham. And these four spiritual masters share these following characteristics, and I chose them because they completely illustrate the generic way of a contract. And let me remind you that I'm now talking about the umbrella contract under which all of your individual experiences of life are gathered. But let's go back now, where we left off with the masters, and where that template is in you. And at that level, you have choice. And what are you really choosing but to see life very differently? From now on, like them, you're going to decide to see that you have choice, but you don't get answers, because that's part of the template. Why don't you get answers? Here's part two. What did they all do that you have to do? They surrendered, every one of them. Every one of them said, I don't know why you want this. I don't know. I don't know why life is the way it is. I don't know any of that stuff. All I know is there must be a source of wisdom, reason, love, compassion that is far greater than me. It does not owe me an explanation as to why things are what they are, as they are, where they are, why they are. All I know is that my task is to incarnate, to learn how to use my spirit, how to maximize the use of this force that is my spirit. I see from their lives that my spirit has the ability to become a vessel for healing, for service, for light, for shadow, for everything. And that if I look at the choices they made, and I take that template of what is wisdom, what is love, what is compassion, what is not, and apply that to every circumstance, situation, event, relationship I'm going to have in my life, the result will be that all my fragments will come back to me as their fragments came back to them. And that I will accomplish some stage of enlightenment, because a fragment is light. And I take more of my light into my system and I grow in enlightenment. This is what that means. In every one of the situations, circumstances, challenges, beautiful, all my talents, all my opportunities, all my everything, every one of these is a contract that serves the whole of my enlightenment, all of it. In this, you are the same as me, I am the same as you. What exactly is a contract, and how best should you understand it? Two images come to mind as the best way to put a visualization in your head so that you can follow with me as I describe what could have been your descent into physical life. The first image, I want to take you way, way back up into the heavens, and you haven't yet come into your physical body. But you're armed with information. You've spoken to the beings of necessity, of choice, of compassion. You have a sense of direction. You're about to incarnate on an experience in which you're going to integrate creation. You're going to explore how it is you have the power to create, form, influence the flow of matter, and how within that experience you can enhance the growth of other people, of other souls. You're about to learn with every single life you live that that's what life is about. It's about discovering that there is no difference between you and another being, and yet you are fully yourself. That in fact, the journey of life is all about giving up life for the journey of the spirit. You're about to learn that. And each one of you is in your backpack of life. You have a detailed, personal, intimate map as to how you're going to accomplish that. So now, your spirit holds that map and you begin your descent. And then you take that map out and you take your spirit out and it begins to sparkle and fall apart, shredding itself, shattering itself into 1,000 pieces. Now each one of those pieces, think of it as a sparkling unit of light. It's you. It's a sparkling piece of you, a part of your spirit that's going on an individual journey, and you're going to go and find that piece. And your job is to retrieve that piece from wherever it is. But in order to get it back, you have to have an interaction with someone or with something. Or you have to be part of an event. You have to co-create some type of experience. You have to earn your spirit back. And that's the way I want you to think about it. And so now your spirit travels and it finds its way to a very selective group of individuals. Not everybody's going to get a unit of your spirit. Now imagine that unit jumps into their backpack. And it's waiting for you. It's waiting to find you, and it begins to beam just like a wave and vibrate because you can feel yourself. You can feel your energy all over the place. You can sense where you are and you can sense where you're not. You can walk into a room and feel, this is very familiar to me. Or you can walk into a place and feel, I don't know where I am. I'm very disoriented here. You can meet somebody and think, this person is like an old friend to me. Or you can meet somebody and think, I can't be anywhere near this person. Point being, you have a response. And sometimes the response is completely illogical. I don't even know this person, but I feel as though I've known them forever. Completely illogical responses, but not if you held in your mind that maybe this person is someone you agreed to meet before you arrived in this physical body. Now let me give you another image, and that other image is that I want you to imagine that your spirit is like, or your soul if you prefer, is like a server in the internet. And it's a very conscious kind of a mechanical device. Because in a sense, your spirit is a mechanical device in that it is subject to the laws of the universe. Thought equals form. Whether it's your spirit or mine, that law applies. That's its mechanical aspect. Cause and effect. For every thought you generate, you will generate an effect. That's a mechanical reality. Whether it's your spirit or mine, that law is real. So there is a mechanical or very ordered aspect to your spirit. So here you are as an internet server, and you're connected to a number of individual computers. Those individual computers are you. Each one is one of your spiritual fragments or spiritual units. In fact, this is a very effective image because what's really true, and follow this because it's an extraordinary thought, but it's a real thought, is that every one of these units is filtering back information to the server all the time. And this is real. Every one of your units of yourself is actively working somewhere on your behalf. Even though you have yet to meet somebody or have yet to experience something that may be 5 years down the road for you, believe it or not, in some way, even now today, you're preparing for that. You're preparing to meet someone or be a part of something that has not yet happened. So all of this energy is happening simultaneously, believe it or not, because it's absolutely the way it is. And think about this. Everything you learn today, right now, you transfer that learning to all 1,000 fragments of yourself, wherever you are. So all of you is learning simultaneously and impacting and influencing all of you wherever you are. Now, that's an extraordinary thought. It's a positively extraordinary thought, but then life and creation is an extraordinary adventure. And let's put it this way, that to begin to think in larger, more energetic, more extraordinary terms about who you are and why you're here actually helps you to realize that is the reason. That to reduce the thought that you're here to do just a job on this planet is to eclipse all of the contributions you make as a being because you reduced yourself to a doing machine. And while that is a very Western point of view, to measure the value of your life according to what you do, that is also a very painful illusion. And we pay for that because we struggle a great deal with that illusion. You're also born to become. And what you're born to become is a whole being. So, let's begin with Abraham. I'm going to reduce their lives to a very bite-sized proportion. And I need to say that because, let's face it, I mean, I could keep you here forever telling you about the extraordinariness of their life journeys. So, with Abraham, remember that here's this man who's wandering around in the desert, and he hears a voice, and the voice says, "Hey, Abraham." Well, it was Abram, actually, in the beginning, and he said, "I want you to start a whole country." And his response is, "Who is talking to me?" Now, do you understand what this is saying? It means that he had no idea, first of all, who Yahweh was. They hadn't met before. So he hears this voice, and it says, "Start this country for me, will you?" Now, his whole response is, "Lord, beat it. Go away. I don't even know who you are." Think about this. Think about a command. He was not born knowing. So as somebody would say to him, "What are you going to do with your lifetime?" And he didn't say, "I have a command to start a nation." He grew into this. And he had to be tested. Like, do you have what it takes to follow that inner power? Now hold that in your mind. Because again and again, I am going to refer to two aspects that I introduced earlier, choice and surrender. You have a choice. You have a choice whether or not you're going to follow me. Your inner voice, that inner direction, will give you guidance. But again and again, you have a choice as to whether or not you're going to follow that. So Abram was directed. And heaven had to find out, will you listen to the guidance I give you? Will you surrender? Will you listen unconditionally? This was a test. All of these teachers had that same test. Abram's test, you know what it was, to take his son to the top of the mountain and to listen as the angel said, "Slay your son, Yahweh wants that." So he pulled out a knife and he was about to kill his son to follow this command. Only to find out the angel said, "You don't have to do that. All we wanted to find out was, could you listen? Could you surrender your will? Here's the key. Please listen to this carefully. Without needing to know why." Now, this is another characteristic that your contracts in life will lead you again and again into these mysteries that say, "I don't know why I'm doing this. I don't know why I'm with you. I don't know why I have to be here. but I do know that my choice is either to fight this or to surrender. And the surrendering is what I want to drop into your soul and into your mind again and again. A contract is an experience, a relationship, a challenge, a mystery that will always hold a question for you. Can you surrender to the outcome that you can't see coming? And I will tell you that every one of your contracts in life will challenge you in this way. For example, let me take you down just a tiny sidebar so you can relate a little bit more to this. Think of a relationship that you love deeply or that threatens you the most. Because those are the two that you're going to want to control the most. You're going to want to control them because these are the two kinds of relationships that can pull the rug out from under you. So they're the ones that you're going to want to control the most. Somehow or other, it'll bring out the most manipulative side of you or the darkest side of you. You have a contract. These are contracts so that you can find out, discover how frightened you are, how insecure you are, how unbelievably unable you are to say to God, I'm taking my hands off this relationship. I don't know why this person's in my life, except to say, whatever it is I'm supposed to learn with this person, experience, maybe this one will be with me forever, maybe not. But I'm going to say, I will enjoy, absorb, learn from this as much as I can. And when the work is done, which may be tomorrow or it may be to the end of my life, I'm going to have to trust that the length of it and the endurance of it, the wealth of it, the challenge of it is in your hands. I don't know many people who can say that prayer, even though that's the truth. So returning now to Abraham, he was able to say that, I surrender, I surrender. Now let's jump into the life of Buddha. Here's Buddha when he was Siddhartha. And his father wanted to protect him from what the outside world looked like. His father wanted to what? Make all his choices for him. Protect him. Keep him in this beautiful home so that he would never see, this is very important, the shadow side of life. He would never see the shadow. He would never have to think that maybe, maybe, maybe the gods, the heavens, had two faces. A face we didn't understand. How could I be so wealthy? How could they be so poor? How could I have such a full belly of food? How can that person be starving? Is there such a thing as a contract that one would starve? Does that make any sense? Well, does it make any sense that a person would have a contract to have so much? What is the difference from heaven's point of view? Obviously, nothing. This is important for you to hold in your mind. Contracts are neutral. There's no such thing as a wonderful contract and a horrible contract. There is just the nature of a contract, which is that it is a journey of learning, and it has challenges to it. It has faces to it. It has events to it. It has a cluster of experiences to it, all of which unfold according to how you direct them. You can take a contract like this one individual that a friend of mine met on a bus in Chicago. This man lost his leg in some kind of accident. He said, you know what? It could have been worse. I could have lost both legs. And you know what I think? People look at me and it's hard for them to look at me, and I notice that. So what I do is I always say to them, it's really hard for you to look at me, and I think you got to get over it because a lot of people look like me. And he said, I think that's my job. I think it's part of my job is to help people get over looking at people like me. Now you could think, look at that. Do you realize what a gift that is? And for him, he says, I think that maybe that's my role. I look at people, I look at them looking at me, and I feel like there's another person I got to talk to. Now, that's a man who lives contracts. Do you understand? He lives it. As he pulls together every single person, he spots someone looking at him. He feels what I'm going to teach you about animation. He feels their response. You can feel someone responding to you. You get that electrical charge. That's animation. And when he feels that, he knows I've got to go make that person look at me and make that person get over the discomfort of looking at me and thinking that if I look at you anymore, you who doesn't have a leg or an arm, I'm not looking at you because I have that fear that that's going to happen to me. And I got to get over that fear. And so he says, I make people look at that fear, and that's how I heal them. So who's the cripple? The person with the leg or without the leg? Is this not divinely paradoxical? That's the language of the divine. So let's go back to Buddha. Buddha is about to be pursued by heaven. Buddha says, I got to get out of this place. It's too perfect. There's got to be another side of life. This doesn't make any sense. It's too perfect. There's no polarity. So he sneaks out and he finds the world. And then he discovers, oh my God, there's people starving on this side. There's people hungry and lost, and they don't look anything like the perfect world I come from. Who's in charge of this world? Who's ordering this? So what does he do? He goes on a search, and heaven pursues him. Now the pursuit begins. What's a pursuit feel like? The same thing you're going through. It feels like, what am I supposed to do with my life? Where should I go? What is life? What's the meaning of life? Exactly how should I fulfill my life? How do I know when I'm fulfilled? He asks all these questions. Do you think you're the only one asking these questions? You're under contract to ask those questions. Why? Because they stir your electricity inside your soul. They wake you up. These are the questions that wake you up. These are the questions that make you explode and want to go sample, feel, seek, touch, taste life. You've got to ask these questions. You begin in confusion. And I got news for you. There's a real good chance that you're going to live a lot of your life in confusion. Why? Because confusion moves you. It moves you. It makes you ask the next question in life. What if you got what you asked for? I want you to imagine something. What if you said, well, what am I supposed to do here? And where do I belong? And just tell me everything I want to know. I want you to imagine something. You go to bed one night and something wakes you up and says, wake up. I got the answers to your questions. And you sit up in bed and said, what? Look, this is what you're supposed to do. And this is who you're supposed to become. This is where you're supposed to go. Let's get this over with. Number one, you think you were born just to do a job like, oh, I don't know, start a healing center and just be perfectly and totally happy. And you say, yeah, that's what I want. That's the information I want. Uh-huh, that's what I want. I want my job. I want my retirement. I want my pension program. Just make sure I'm always happy. Will you do that for me? Uh-huh, right. So then you say, and by the way, while you're at it, who's my perfect soulmate, lover, perfect happiness, perfect person, so I will always be perfectly perfect? So then you get that one. Oh, yeah. So then your angel says, okay, so your perfect person is this one. So then you get to say, so now I know what I'm supposed to do and what I'm supposed to be. So then your angel says, yeah, that's it. So now you get to say, well, what am I supposed to do with the rest of my life? And your angel's going to say, oh, for God's sake, I'm out of here. What more do you want? The journey is to fill your own belly with the unknown. Don't you know? You're here to fill the unknown with yourself. Do you know that most of the questions you ask in life are never going to have a reasonable answer? Because they're not supposed to. They're supposed to lead you to wonder and to wander. This is the journey, to fill in, to make choices when you don't know the answer. And then after you make a choice, suddenly, you know a contract is complete because your belly feels full of power. That's when you know you've made a right choice. So let me continue. Let's go back to Buddha just a minute, because we can't leave him under the tree, because that's where you know Buddha ends up. He moves, he walks, he's searching, he starves, he does everything to try and make life logical, to try and make sense out of life. And you know what happens? It doesn't get him anywhere, and he finally decides, that's it, I'm done. I'm sitting here until God talks to me. That's it, I'm not moving. Because life isn't logical, and I demand logic. So there he is. Who knows how long he hung out there? There's myth, there's legend, there's folklore. Some say he hung out there for years. Who knows? Does it matter? Not at all. What matters is he finally wakes up enlightened. Now, I want you to think about that word, with light, full of light. What does that word mean? It means that all of the fragments I talked to you about, all of the parts of your 1,000 spiritual units of the self, he had managed to collect while sitting under that tree. How did he do that? How did he do that? Let's just play what if, because I'm not enlightened. So at this point, I want you to understand, I am standing a great big huge distance away from Buddha. I'm about to offer you a speculation, but in my heart, something tells me that maybe, maybe, maybe some part of this is accurate. What Buddha did was surrender. Buddha decided, I don't know the mind of God. So I'm going to stop asking God to tell me the mind of God because I'm not sure I have a right to know that. Two, I'm going to live according to this perception that where I am is where I'm supposed to be. And that there is value in everything I do, in every place I am. And it's up to me as to whether or not I'm going to see that value. Number three, I'm responsible for the manner in which I conduct my psyche, my soul, my consciousness. I'm responsible for that. I create, I influence, I am. And it's reflected in the way I use my spirit. Number four, there are commitments I need to keep on this planet. I have to live in that assumption. I have to live in the assumption that if someone reaches out to me for help, that's not random. That's scripted. That if someone falls in front of me on the ground, that's not random. I have to pick them up. And if someone doesn't fall in front of me, I have to look, perhaps bless them, but they're not for me to pick up except with a loving blessing because they fell in front of somebody else. And that's that person's job. My job with them is to bless them and keep going. My job is to attend to the tasks that seem to come into my life and the ones I'm sent into. Sometime, the gods will send me on a task that says, we want you to help run this business. It's important because you've got skills. You've got a genius at strategy. You've got the kind of strength that inspires people. Take up this task and run. Other people are going to be given a task. You are so creative. Please, please, please use that creative ability of yours and inspire people with creating quilts. So do anything but share that creative ability. Other people, you have got a heart so warm. We have got to send you on missions to embrace other people, to love them a little bit more where others have not loved them enough. There are so many missions that you're sent on. These are missions. These are tasks that only you can do. It's up to you to choose whether or not you're going to value them. Buddha would teach there's illusions in the world. This is where part of your contracts send you. They send you into your illusions. Your contracts send you into illusions. What do I mean by that? I like to call these the Buddha contracts. These are the ones that send you into situations in which you're going to find that what you thought was power has no power. What you thought was a big deal turns out not to be a big deal. Here's a contract. I want you to think about someone whose approval you're desperate to have, but whose approval you never get. I want you to think about that. Surely there must have been one person in your life or one person in your life. And if there isn't, I can tell you there will be one person in your life that you meet whose approval you are desperate to have and you won't get. Not at all. And that's a contract. Why? Because it's going to engage you in wanting to pull back a unit of power in yourself to empower yourself so that you don't need that person's energy to feel good about yourself. Because that's what empowerment is about. And you're going to know it when one day you say, you know what? I feel so strong today that I actually can look at you and say, whether or not you like me, need me, approve of me, want me, no longer matters. And you have no idea how good that feels. And that's when you know a unit of your spirit, a fragment, has come right back into you. And you feel that fullness, and you feel stronger and more vibrant than you felt before. That's how you know you have a contract, and that's what it feels like to have it complete. But let's go back. Buddha was pursued until Buddha decided to surrender the need to ask questions and to trust that there was order in life and that everything that was put in front of him, he was to see as having divine power built into it, that it wasn't for him to judge the value of something, but rather to assume it had value and to act from that posture. Let's go to another one. Let's move into the contract of Jesus. This is one of my favorite contracts. All right. Now, Jesus arrives at the temple. Let's just get to the temple. Let's bypass everything else. I don't know what he did between birth and 13. Who knows? But let's get to the temple. And in the temple, he has an epiphany, an awakening. He's 13 years old. He's going to get bar mitzvah anointed. He's at the temple. And he tells his parents, don't you know now it's time for me to get about my father's business? Now, this is very interesting because where does that come from? Now, watch this. Watch this. It's so extraordinary. I'm going to jump around his life because I have to weave pieces together to make sense of the contractual motion. And oftentimes, you're going to do the same thing. Because a contract holds together pieces of your life and not in a linear way, but in a, isn't it fascinating? Tomorrow feeds into yesterday and then there's today and you'll see if I can get you to float way above your life and look over it. You're going to see like a hologram how all of the pieces connect in this beautiful pattern simultaneously. So I want you to descend right back now. We're back. We're in Jerusalem. We're in Bethlehem. We are 2,000 years ago. We are back in time. And we're looking at this young boy who's just awakened. And he knows in his heart, in his gut, that he has to be about, how fascinating a word, his father's business. Well, that's intriguing. What father? He had a father. He means some grander source, some hugely cosmic divine source that he recognizes he's descended from. Let's have a question here. Does he know the full extent to what he's doing? Well, there's some clues along the way that he does know some things, but he doesn't know others. Now, that's the important thing. Why? Because here again, we have the chemistry of choice and surrender. The chemistry of the unknown, choice and surrender. So he goes about his life and he vanishes, as we all know, from age 13 to 30. We suspect now maybe he wasn't a mystery school. Probably he wasn't a mystery school. Let me say, I believe he was being educated in mystery schools. But you can think what you want. Nonetheless, at age 30, he returns. And he emerges into the scene with a baptism. Intriguing. In the baptism, what does he do? He accepts the power of choice. Ooh, this is fascinating. He goes through a ritual, and he accepts the power of choice, and he's anointed. What does this mean? Think of this. Just flow with me as I talk about this, and I want you to flow. I want what I'm saying to you to flow into your system. I don't want you just to hear me. I want you to feel what I'm saying. I want you to just let this flow in you. Picture this. I want you to picture yourself standing in water. Now, remember, water's emotion. He is standing in water. You are standing in your emotion. You are knee-deep in it. And something forceful comes into you and just basks right over you. It just moves right over your head and down over your body and into your being. And somehow, a force moves in, and you feel yourself. Feel your spirit. I want you to just feel the animation of your spirit. And a question is put to you, the deepest question that can be asked. And it's, will you consciously use this force now? Will you accept responsibility? Will you accept the responsibility for the conscious use of your spirit now? Can you do it? Will you do it? And he says yes, and he wakes up. He wakes up. He's been anointed. Think, this is what being conscious is about. And now he sets about the task of consciously using that spirit. What does that mean? Look at how he used it. He consciously used his spirit as a vessel to heal, to teach, to treat every human being with such dignity. And he also laid a template that is the way to treat others in this lifetime. Did he know that he was supposed to do that? I'm going to have to say, I don't know. I'm going to have to say that maybe, in that experience of that light coming through him, that's often illustrated as a dove above his head, that dove and the Bodhi tree of Buddha were similar imageries, that there was a moment of a great awakening in which he realized, you know what? The highest contract is to serve those that my Father in heaven, his name for it, puts in front of me. And I will vessel. I'll channel whatever energy needs to come through me in order to accomplish a task. And I do not need to know what that task is. I don't need to know why. All I need to do is to repeat this. I've chosen to serve. I don't know what the outcome is. I have no idea why it's me. I don't even need to know why. All I need to do is trust that if I'm with you and I feel that certain energy, what I need to do is act according to higher principles and not be attached. Here's your clue. Not be attached to the outcome. Never be attached to the outcome. Now we're mixing an interesting chemistry here. We're mixing the chemistry of Buddha and the chemistry of Christ. Act in present time. Act with love. Act with brotherhood. And Buddha, don't be attached to the outcome. I am telling you how to interact with your contracts. And I'll get to the grounded level, but not till I have you absolutely templated so you know what to do once I drop you on the earth. Because I'm not going to leave you on your own until I carve you with this precious information, which is the contracts of the masters who've gone before us. Now then, here's a part of the contract of Jesus that is perhaps one of the most extraordinary features. And that's, there he is, having taught. And he wanders about and he heals and he teaches and he teaches and he heals. And think about one unbelievable healing experience. Think. There is a scene in the scripture, and it's one of my favorite, where he's teaching, and the apostles are all around him. And there's a crowd, and the crowd screaming, heal me, this, that, touch me, heal me, give, 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 give me. And you know what? Let me tell you something. The more conscious you become in life, and you can expect this, as if we're all going to be that conscious. Oh, please. Let's just hope we get conscious enough not to run each other over when we get to a stoplight. Okay, that's about as best as we can hope for. Let's none of us flatter ourselves. But suffice to say that there comes a time when just when you think you've become so enlightened, you're going to be tested. Great big huge test. You're going to be surrounded by people and smashed and squashed just to see really if you've got such a forgiving heart or if you really have developed such a generous spirit. So here's the scene. Jesus is in this crowd, and here he's not even looking behind him. And this woman wants to be healed. And she says, just let me touch the hem of his garb. And all she does is extend her two fingers and touch it, just a tiny touch. What does he say? Who touched me? Peter says, are you nuts? There's 1,000 people around here. What are you talking about? He says, no, I felt the power go through me. Ah, did you hear what I just told you? I felt the animation go through me. I felt it. I vesseled it. I don't know who I touched. I don't know why. But some force went through me, bypassed my own will. I didn't choose to let that energy go through me. A greater choice than my own was made. I was used. It flowed through me. I didn't look at her and decide whether or not she was worthy. It just shot through me. That experience captures so much of what I want to teach you, that a contract with someone bypasses your reason many, many times. And it is an exchange of energy, and it's an exchange of your spirit that if you trust in the context, and I'll describe this in a very earthy, grounded way, but I want the principle to get into your head that your interactions with people in life and where heaven might send you or where you've agreed to go, there's a real good chance that it's not going to make sense to your conscious mind and that you might never be told why. Your position is again and again simply to say, I agree. I agree. I agreed to this somehow before I got here. I don't know why I'm here. I don't know why I'm part of a situation where my house was burned down. I don't know. I haven't got a clue. I don't know why I was in a situation in which I won the lottery and I'm suddenly worth $400 million. I have no idea why I agreed to that. I haven't got a clue. All I know is it's an event that happened and I need to work with that. How do I work with that? Well, I'll take it one choice at a time, and I have to trust that I made agreements with people who'll help me deal with this, whether it's to rebuild my house or to share my wealth, or to invest my wealth, to grow my wealth. All that I need is going to be provided because I provided for that before I incarnated. I will not choose to lose my spirit, to continue to shatter myself into 1,000 pieces by worrying about tomorrow. That's not the wise way. Go find in any scripture any spiritual master who says, leave me alone for a while, I've got to worry about tomorrow. I want you to find that teaching. You won't. You won't. I'll buy it from you if you find that teaching. You will never find a teaching where a spiritual master says, I need a retreat so I can worry about tomorrow with a lot of precision. It's not going to happen. What they teach you is don't give it up. You're under contract. Everything is taken care of. All your needs will be met. Will you please stop? Jesus says, will you please look at the lilies of the field? What is wrong with you? Stop it. Stop losing your spirit. Don't invest your energy in such trivial, negative pursuits. But here's my very favorite thing to close on the life of Jesus so we can move on. At the end of his life, you know that he went to the Garden of Gethsemane as we enter into the crucifixion drama of his life. Now, the most important part, perhaps, or shall we say, one of the most important parts, significant features, is when he's in the Garden of Gethsemane, gets on his knees and he says a prayer. And he says, "Why do you want me to do this? I don't want to do this." And then he says, "But if it's your will, I'll do it." Do you understand how significant that is? Let's dissect that for a moment. Did he say, "I'm not doing this until you tell me why"? No, he didn't say that. And number two, he just said, "I don't know what I'm doing. I haven't got a clue why I'm doing this. It's going to be ugly and brutal and savage. I haven't got a clue." Do you understand he didn't even know his own contract? A part of it, perhaps the greatest fulfillment of it. He still wasn't revealed. Here's the wholeness of why you had to live the fullness of your life. Still, that wasn't told to him. And yet, let's turn around real fast, whoosh, and go back. He had a contract with the 12 men that he chose as his apostles, and indeed the 13th, Mary Magdalene. This wasn't an accident. He chose these people very specifically. They incarnated to be his team. He had contracts with them. They all formed bricks underneath this roof of his house, which was his sacred contract. Each one was a contract, an individual one that served the whole. Each fragment you collect is an individual contract. Peter, Matthew, James, John, Andrew, all of them, Mary Magdalene, his mother, Joseph, all of these people, Simon, Judas, every one of them, a contract. Now I'm going to take you down from way up here in the heavens with the masters, and I'm going to drop you back on earth, and I want you to picture yourselves sitting in a classroom with me, and that I'm pulling down a screen against the wall, and I'm going to say, "All right, this is you, and I want to show you something. I want to show you what a template looks like inside of you." Because one of the values, one of the many, many, many rich values that come from studying lives of the masters is that they represent what's in you, but it's not animated yet. And this is a very, very important thing to understand. You're working according to an unconscious program. It's an archetypal program. We're going to go so deeply into archetypes as we continue. But for now, let me say that you have a program in you, and their lives illustrate that program. It's a template. And so this is the one that's in you that was in them. This is why you look at a master, you look at any spiritual master, and there's something about them that just makes you feel so empowered and so full of hope. They make you feel full of hope. They make you feel loving. They fill your heart. They fill your spirit. What is it about them that does that? It's not their personalities. It's that their spirit does not lack one fragment. They've pulled together all their fragments. They are one. They are whole. They are that which we are trying. Let me say this again. They are that which we are destined. Let me say this again. They are that which we are programmed to become. Now, what's the template look like? Let me describe the pattern, because what they did is happening to you, right? Just as they were born, we're going to have to trust this, at a particular time, place, and space. There wasn't just any accident, like let's drop a spiritual master into the middle of nowhere. This is timed. Similarly, your life is timed. It's not an accident. It's so well timed that it's timed. Now, once you are incarnated, just like the masters, look at these four, look at any. Each one went through a process of awakening. They didn't just know who they were. They didn't just know why they were here. They had their own questions about what, specifically, the logic, the order, the purpose of life, and where they fit in to the whole scheme of life. They weren't born knowing that. Do you understand? They had to go on a mission and discover that. Here's the word, mission. They had to go on a journey. They had to wander through the desert. Buddha wandered. Jesus wandered. Muhammad wandered. Abraham wandered. They all did. They just didn't sit back and say, I want to know why I'm here, who I am, and what I'm supposed to do. Come on, let's go. It doesn't work like that. They discovered. And on the way to discovery, they realized that even the way to discovery was purpose. You're under contract to wander. Get used to it. That is as much a part of your contract as is perhaps your ability to heal somebody or to participate in that, or as is your ability to become somebody who nurtures people by the way you prepare your meals in a kitchen, to nurture and send light through food. Do you understand? You don't even realize what you're doing. All you need to do is to accept what you do very well and do it. And to accept what you don't do very well and realize, I'm not animated. There's no electricity with this. This isn't for me. I need to walk away. Back to the template that's in you. You are programmed. Your life includes the wandering journey. Just once? No. You're going to wander several times. You're going to wander every time you finish a stage of empowerment. You're going to be set off wandering again. Because part of what life is, part of the rules, are you can't sit still. You can't stand still. You can't be still. Until you are still. Oh, how confusing. It's not that confusing. Let me keep going here. It's so much fun. Because once you kind of get the rules, it's all right. I mean, you kind of get the rules and you realize we're all playing with the same rules. And that's why we're in this together. Okay. So now you're off wandering around. What's the next phase of your template? The next phase is that when the awakening comes in you, when you finally say, wait a minute, I wonder what the real purpose of life is. What happens when you ask that question? Because I have to assume that everybody who is listening to this program has asked that question, or is at least afraid to ask that question, and it's too late if you're listening because you've already asked that question. So what happens is, and listen clearly, at the moment that Jesus and Muhammad, Buddha and Abraham decided to follow the voice, to follow their interior, in that instant, they went through a reversal. A reversal. They went from living life in which matter was more important than their inner world to recognizing the inner world is more important than the external world. Now, let me say that again because it's so incredible that I can hardly stand my body when I teach this. In that moment, and this is called transformation, this is transformation. This is it, where you reverse yourself. You go from living a life in which you see the outside world coming toward you, and then you realize, wait, your inside world comes first, and it shapes and it forms the outside world. Well, what's so big about knowing that? I'll tell you what's so big about knowing that. It's great, big, huge. It's so big. Everything in your life is different when that finally drops into your being. You are being downloaded with the largest epiphany. Because from that point on, look, listen, feel this. Just feel this. I want you to put something in front of you that really has your power. Think about something. Think about someone, something, some unforgiving thing. Everyone listening has something in their childhood that they're still wimping about or crying, or some wound that you have yet to kind of sew up. Just get there. And now I want you to just hurt. I want you to just turn up the steam on that wound. Just turn up the fire. I want you to picture that person looking at you and saying, I don't care if I hurt you. You're nothing to me. I want you, if you're afraid, if someone's abandoned you, I want you to feel you are as alone as the day is long. I want you to be in the deepest part of your fear. And now imagine that I walk up to you and I whisper in your ear, listen to me. There's no truth to what you are looking at all. Watch this. And I'm going to tell you, take a really deep breath. Take such a deep breath. And in that breath, I want you to just pull that fear into you. And now look just for a tiny little, look at that shadow, that illusion that you're looking at, and realize, you know what? I gave that person authority over me. What was wrong with me? How could I have given that one person the power to control the whole of my life? I'm the one who determines who has power and authority over me. Nobody was born to control me. I give that away if I want to. Now, that is an extraordinary thing. But you have to learn that. There comes a moment when we learn that. And let's go back to the masters. Part of their lives, if you look at it, part of their lives is that they learned that. And they had that moment where they finally realized power comes from within. And then, here we go, one last step, as if that wasn't enough. That's the step at which they chose. This is the choice step at which they decided to say, aha, I'll follow you. Abram went to Abraham and said, okay, I choose. I will go to Israel. And Jesus said, okay, I'll choose. I'll choose. I will choose to serve in this way. I will choose to die in this horrible way. I don't know why. I agree. Let's go. I choose to agree. And Buddha said, I choose. I choose to wander. I'm giving up all that stuff. There is something else. Everyone, Muhammad said finally to the angels, all right, all right, all right. I'll choose to follow this voice. I'll meet Allah. All of them make the choice. What happens when you make the choice? The next thing that happens is you develop a very different relationship to every one of the experiences you have in life. This is when your sight gets elevated and you start thinking in terms of contracts. Before this point, everything looks like it's casual, it's awful, it can hurt, it's this. We think in terms of luck. You got bad luck, you got good luck, you've got no luck. Everything looks like accidents, this kind of thing. Now I'm going to yank you up by the shoulders. I'm going to, and I'm going to sit you down. And now you're at the level where you look at life and you realize, oh my, it's not an accident. I've made agreements. I have to rethink about every single relationship in my life. I have to rethink about why I can't have a relationship with this person. No matter what I've done, nothing seems to engage contact. Maybe I don't have a contract with that person. And this person, and it just fell together, and our friendship feels like it's 35,000 years old. Maybe we did agree to be together for some reason in this lifetime. Maybe there is some purpose. Maybe that purpose is just to love each other and be each other's best friend. Maybe we agreed to be on the journey together because we have what it takes to support each other, and we all need that. You do have contracts like that, and that's the purpose of them. To be a support to somebody's heart. Not all your contracts are to build great businesses or to do great jobs. Sometimes a contract you have with someone is to be a loving support to them. And what greater contract can you have? You would know it if you need that in your life. If the moment ever comes when you think, God, I need to be loved right now. I feel so alone. What would you rather find out? That you have a contract to go start yet another business? Or what do you need in that moment is someone for your spirit. Very interesting how you value contracts in the moment. All right, now that it brought you back to get down to the nitty-gritty day-to-day, what is a contract anyway in my practical life? Long before I'm a master, I want to know what to do with it here on earth. I'm going to give you a tool as your beginning point. And that's called animation. And I talk about that as the word that represents the electrical, the energetic connection that we have in life, that I think your spirit is a source of animation. It is animated. It's a life force. You know, if you look back and read the book of Genesis, for example, there is the scene where God takes the dirt from the earth, takes the earth, and he breathes life into it, uses the breath to animate earth, and from that life comes. Now, that is animation. Your whole breath is animation. Now, that's your trigger point, a sensing device as to what, who, where you have a contract. You can feel something. Now, you know, I have spent a long time teaching people about the nature of intuition. But what intuition is, truly, is your ability to sense animation. That's what it is. And someone like me, I sense your animation at a distance. That's all I do. But anybody can do that. The only difference between me and someone else is that I know it, and most people don't believe it. But it's as simple as anything, and you are always sensing the animation of other people. You're always sensing, for example, the animation of people you have a contract with, whether or not you realize it. It's just that you are not recognizing that energy that you're sensing is that. So let me ask you about something just to think about as I talk about animation. And that's, when you meet somebody, you can sense right away whether or not you're animated with them. If you like them, dislike them, this or that, you know it right away. Now, that's a signal that you have a contract. You also know when you have no animation at all, don't you? You know exactly what that feels like. It's like flat soda. It's like nothing. It's like nothing. You don't remember them. It's not that they're unimportant. Hear what I'm saying. It's just that they're not energetically connected to you. So it'll be very hard for you to remember them, or it might be very hard for you to get any specific fix on them. That energy is not there. Whereas, when you do have that energy with someone, you can only be with them for a second and you remember it. And in fact, sometimes it won't ever leave you. Can you think of someone in your life where you just met them for a few minutes and they have stuck with you? And you hope that you'll see them again? That's what I'm talking about. One person I know said that she met a gentleman that she wanted to get involved with in a personal relationship. And she felt what I would call animation. Of course, you can call it whatever you want. But I mean, she said she was very animated toward this person, kind of thing. And she wanted a long-term relationship with this person. Now, that's not how it unfolded. They did have a long-term relationship, but it didn't unfold in a romantic way. It came in a different way in that they started to work together. She, of course, always held in her mind that it would shift to a different kind of role, but it never made it into that direction. He felt a connection to her, but he felt it in a different way. And when they put their chemistries together, they had what it took. They were scientists. They still are. They do great work together. They're phenomenal with the chemistries of their two brains and their insights and their intuition. You put them together and they seem to compensate for what the other one doesn't have. One is a very sharp strategist. The other one has a fantastic gut response, intuitive. For the record, the man's the intuitive. And she's the strategist. She's this brilliant mind. She wanted it to be something it wasn't contracted to be. So the animation didn't go there, but when you put them in the laboratory together, this is where they were meant to be. This is where they agreed to be. This is where they agreed to find each other. And that's where they agreed to have a path of service in life. How does this other factor play in? I'm going to walk you through this because it's important, important to know that. I'm going to call this person, just call her the letter A. Let's say that A really did not feel good about herself and needed this person to make her feel good about herself. She felt great about herself as a scientist. She knew she was brilliant. But she didn't feel good, perhaps, in the partnership way. Whereas she wanted this man to fill in that space. This man couldn't do this. Now, here's where the important part comes in, and I want you to follow this carefully. I want you to imagine that he had a unit of her spirit in his backpack. And what he had in his backpack was a unit of her spirit that she had to not need from him so that he could finally give it back to her. Let me say it this way, because that could sound confusing until you get it, all right? Did you ever say, now that I don't need it, you can have it? You know that expression? She wanted him to approve of her so that she wouldn't have to approve of herself. If he could give her that approval, then she would be okay. He had a contract with her that read, never give her approval, because if you do, she'll never develop her own. So his role was never to approve of her. Isn't that outrageous? But that was the contract. I'm not supposed to approve of you. Otherwise, you will never become strong enough, listen to this, not to need me. And you must become strong enough not to need me, because then we can be together as equals. So, here's how it played out. They were very bonded as scientists. They had great respect. And in that role, because they were equal, because they empowered each other equally, neither of them went through those insecurities of thinking, what if he left me? What if she left me? It was a completely different relationship. But in this other world, she wanted something from him, and he was under contract not to give it to her. So there was this tight kind of lack of emotional animation that was not coming back. He could not do that. And then one day, she was able to say to herself and realize, I cannot reach to this person for something that I should generate within myself. And from that point on, she was able to accept the relationship as it was scripted, as two scientists. She had empowered herself. And you see how she became more whole from that. There was no animation romantically. She had to become strong enough to recognize that. It was a fantastic story. A fantastic story. This is how contracts play out on the earth, these small, individual, tiny ways. But I haven't even begun to go near, what does it look like to wake up to your talent? Do you know how many people are sent into your life to wake up your talent, to make you come alive to all the empowerment you have? You haven't got a clue. There are so many people that come in your life to protect you so that some harm doesn't come to you. An extraordinary amount of interesting roles and contracts you have. And then there are the ones you have. Don't forget what you're doing in other people's lives. The point is, what I want you to learn is this, how to recognize animation and then how to interpret it. How to interpret your contracts, how to recognize, how to know what to do with them, and how to interpret them. And we begin that by entering through the archetypal world, which comes next.
This concludes Session 2 of Sacred Contracts with Carolyn Mace. Our program continues with Session 3.